Typically, competence has been measured by cross-cultural psychologists as, which you might imagine, because cross-cultural psychologists are using a low level of analysis. And in so doing, they're looking at things in terms of personality and personal characteristics. So not surprisingly, psychologists have tried to measure intercultural competence in terms of individual characteristics. They've said, what combination of characteristics allows us to predict competence? And competence in this case is typically defined in terms of one's experience of culture shock, for instance. Do you experience more or less of that? Are you able to accomplish your job goals? Are you able to maintain good social relationships? Are you successful in transferring information? These are various ways that effectiveness has been measured. Something that's not up there but is a very common measure is satisfaction. How satisfied are you with your sojourn or with your stay abroad? And then what traditionally has been done is that there have been some attempt to measure either traits, like personality traits, extroversion or introversion, for instance, or various levels of knowledge. How much do you know about the other culture? What's your attitude? Do you have an open attitude or a closed attitude towards the other culture? Or what kind of behavior? Do you know how to act in ways that are more European or more Latin American and so forth? And in fact, we've tried to train these things. You know, so we've given people training in knowledge, training in attitudes, training in skills, or selecting for traits. You can't train the traits, but you select for the traits. All in attempt to try to see if we couldn't improve effective intercultural behavior. My colleague Mitch Hammer has done a meta study on effectiveness studies. A meta study means a study about, you know, that compiles the data from the other studies. And he finds that no matter what individual or what combination of personal characteristics you take, the very best correlation with any of these effective behaviors is 0.33. 0.33 correlation. That's the best. Now, a 0.33 correlation means that there is some effect of these characteristics and the behavior. That is, there's some connection between the two. But it's considerably less than predictive. You know, this, as he says, it's considerably less than the Holy Grail. It's not the answer to explaining how people engage in effective intercultural behavior to find any combination of these characteristics. This has led us in our work to redefine the underlying condition here. The idea that we have based on the developmental model is that effective intercultural behavior is not so much a function of those traits as it is a function of where you are along this continuum. And that if you are operating at adaptation, you are likely to be able to engage in knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors. You're to have a set of those things, which in fact are related to these outcomes. That if you are operating at defense, you still have knowledge, attitudes, and skills, but that those tend to be then operating through a polarized experience of difference and are less likely to generate effective intercultural behavior. In other words, we've changed the underlying construct from one of personality characteristics to one of the experience of cultural difference, with the idea that we can predict, based on the quality of your experience, meaning where you are along this developmental, that we can predict how effective you're going to be. We now have studies that are showing that this is indeed the case. And it looks like we're doing better than the personal characteristics in doing this. Looks like we are, in fact, able to say, if you're operating largely at minimization, you are going to be this much better than somebody who's operating at defense. If you're operating at acceptance, you will be better than somebody operating at minimization in these behaviors up here. So it's pretty interesting that we're getting what we thought of. The way we got this is by generating an instrument called the Intercultural Development Inventory. What the inventory does is it allows us to place people on the continuum individuals and in the aggregate groups on this continuum of intercultural sensitivity. And the way we did this, just a very brief description of how we developed this instrument, is that we started out with interviews. We started out going out and interviewing, I think it was about 40 people, and we said we asked them some questions about their experience of cultural difference. Then we asked some people, raters that we called them. We trained some people roughly in the developmental model, and we said, we selected 25 of these transcripts. We said, read these transcripts and see if you can classify the statements according to the developmental model. And what we're interested in is, first of all, did they see anything that looked like stages of development? Secondly, were they able to classify them in some way, saying, well, it's more denial or more defense or minimization? And then thirdly, would they agree with one another? You know, there are three of them, and they were from different cultures, and some were men and some were women, and so we tried to create diversity in the group. And sure enough, they were able to rate these items with very high inter-rater reliability, you know, up in the 0.90 range, you know, meaning that they had a lot of agreement on how they were classifying these statements. So that looked pretty good. We then took the statements from people themselves and created what we call the intercultural items. So the instrument, the intercultural development inventory, is not made up of statements that a couple of white American guys made up. They come from statements that were made by people in this wide variety of cultures that we had through our interviews. And that's important. That gives what's called a content validity to the statements. Then we took these statements that we generated out of the interviews and did a pilot test where we had a lot of the culturally different people, and we had them respond to these items. That in turn gave us a smaller set of items, which we then submitted to a bunch of experts, and we said to the experts, well, what do you think about these items? Can you reclassify them? And we threw out all of the items that they couldn't classify. That gave us a set, at this point, I think of about maybe 175 or 200 items. And these items we then gave to a large sample of people, over 500 people, and did a confirmatory factor analysis. The factor analysis allowed us to test different models against the way people responded to these items. And by responding to the items, it means that we're asking them to agree or disagree in a range to statements. There were 50 statements now in the end. And then we factor analyzed that to see if it fell into the categories of denial, defense, minimization, and so forth. And we were able to then finalize these scales, which I'll show you in a moment, and determine reliability of each of these scales. For those of you who do statistics, you'll recognize this in a moment. And we did some validity testing. Here are the scales. Here's what came out with the confirmatory factor analysis. That denial and defense clumped together, although we can separate them, and we do, we can create clusters to interpret denial and defense separately. They came together, 0.85, very high reliability for this scale. Reversal scale, which measures that tendency to reverse the polarization, it came out as a separate scale, again, high reliability. Minimization, which we just discussed. Acceptance and adaptation tended to clump together as well, although once again, we can separate them for interpretive purposes, and we were able to measure the encapsulated form of marginality, not the constructive form of marginality. Maybe in the next version, we think we just didn't have enough people in the validation sample to get a good measurement of encapsulated marginality. So these are the five scales. We also ran this against a validity testing, so-called construct validity testing, where we measured it against something called the world-mindedness scale and intercultural anxiety. The hypothesis was that the more ethno-relative, that is, the more sensitive people were, the higher would be their world-mindedness and the lower would be their anxiety. And that's the way it came out. So this acts as a kind of a construct validity testing. So what this is doing is providing us with information about, as we said, the predominant orientation, that is where people are along this continuum. It also provides us with, this is called the DS score, it also provides us with a PS score. And the PS score shows where people would think that they are, the sort of ideal. And the test creates a distinction between the predominant orientation, the developmental score, and the ideal, which is their perceived score over here. We can tell from this gap the extent to which they are overestimating how sensitive they are. And remember when I said back when people are at minimization, they tend to think that they're a lot better than they, quote, really are. It's because if you think people are basically similar, you know, and you ask, and I ask you, how well do you think you're adapting to cultural difference? You say, well, I'm really adapting well, because in fact, you're not seeing much cultural difference, but, you know, so you think you're really doing great, you know. But everybody else around may not think so, you know. It's like the guy who says, I never have culture shock. And his colleagues say, yes, but everybody else around him does. You know? So we are able to measure that gap with the IDI, the Intercultural Development Inventory. We're able to say, here is the extent to which you are overestimating your cultural sensitivity. It's a very interesting score and something that really gives us a lot to work with. The second thing we're able to do is, besides give the predominant orientation and say you predominantly are organizing your experience of cultural difference in terms of minimization, we can say that. We can also define what are the issues and their level of resolution. And these issues are of two kinds. One of them we call trailing issues. And in the trailing issues, we say there may be something that is holding you back from moving forward. That here, the idea of development would be that your predominant orientation moves forward into higher and higher levels of ethno-relativism. However, if you have some issues that you have not completely resolved, say in denial or defense, it may be holding you back from moving forward. We can find out, with this test, we can find out what those issues are and how resolved they are. Now, we don't know what that looks like exactly for the individual. So we have to go, in our feedback process, we have to go talk to the individual and say, so how is this working for you? You've got some, shows that you've got some unresolved issues of polarization here. Now, in general, that means that you're looking at the world to some extent in terms of us and them. So where is that working for you in your experience? And we find out then in people's particular experience what that polarization is. We know that there's polarization. We know that it hasn't been completely resolved. By resolved, it means that you have moved past the us and them idea, and you've moved at least into the minimization position. Or it may be that somebody's position looks like this, where they have a primary position in acceptance, but they've got unresolved issues in minimization. Yeah? And we say, well, what's going on in minimization here for you? That typically issues in minimization have to do with over-assuming commonality, over-assuming similarity with other people. What are some ways in which you might be doing that? And we interview people and we talk to them about ways in which they might be bringing, unconsciously even sometimes, an assumption of similarity or commonality to their interaction with others by surfacing or unpacking those issues, as we say sometimes. We are able to help people see what they need to resolve to move forward into the further stages. I can tell you that in general terms at denial, the major issue is the recognition of cultural difference. That is, for people to move out of denial, they need to learn how to recognize cultural difference, period. You know, Mr. Brown here needs to be able to recognize that there are different kinds of chocolate. You know, that's how he's got to start out. All right. In defense, the major issue is the reduction of threat. And we can see to what extent are people feeling threatened, and then we can help them to reduce this threat. You know, that is, if you're working with people in development, you're doing coaching or giving feedback about this, you might be saying, so how is it that we help people to reduce the threat that they're experiencing? That in the reduction of threat, we allow them, and we'll come back to you, we allow this to move on to minimization. That in minimization, there are two forms of it. First of all, the early form of minimization. And in early minimization, the major issue is the discovery of commonality. So I need to say, well, here are the ways in which we're all just human. You see? And you can see that that acts to reduce the threat. So the movement into minimization is reducing the threat of that stereotype somehow, some person who's so different from me. In late minimization, the major issue to be dealt with is the reconciliation of unity and diversity. And this is a very interesting issue here. Reconciliation in the sort of sense that Charles Hamden Turner uses the term of how is it that you take something that is frequently treated as opposite, you know, we're all of us together, or we're all of us different. How do we take that and reconcile it, meaning that we put it together into a package in which we have both unity and diversity operating with one another in some way? The ability to do that, the ability to set up what we call a dynamic tension between unity and diversity, is what allows people to then move out of minimization. It allows them to say, oh, here's what it is that we have in common, but here's how that can be reconciled with what it is that is different amongst us, and those two things can coexist in a way that is important and workable. That reconciliation of unity and diversity leads us then to the issue of acceptance, and the issue of acceptance is largely curiosity. So what do we do to address people's curiosity? At adaptation, this is curiosity and knowledge. So people here, you know, need to know stuff. And the reason that they need to know it is because the issue of adaptation is going to be authentic behavior. That is, what I need to learn in adaptation is how to behave in ways in these other cultures that I now know about and that I'm now able to imagine cultural differences, but how can I behave authentically in those different cultures without sort of pretending like I'm acting like somebody from the other culture? We all know that doesn't work. And so the issue here is, how does one come to authentic behavior, increase one's repertoire of behavior? Those are the predominant issues moving through this the developmental model. It is the resolution of these issues. Well, first of all, the identification of these issues through the IDI, and then the attempt to do coaching, training, or other interventions that help to resolve these issues, that then allows for the movement of the peak, the predominant orientation, to move along this continuum. So that's the basic theory of the measurement and some ideas about how we actually go about doing it.